So a reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela, Chapter 13, The Lord's Dancing at Rathiatra. Deha smriti nahi yara samsara kupakatara taha haite na chahe udhara viraha samudra jale Kamati min gile gile gopi gane nahatara para. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, the gopis are fallen in the great ocean of separation and they are being devoured by the timangila fish, which represent their ambition to serve you. The gopis are to be delivered from the mouths of these timangila fish, for they are pure devotees. Since they have no material conception of life, why should they aspire for liberation? The gopis do not want that liberation desired by yogis and jnanis, for they are already liberated from the ocean of material existence. Purport. The bodily conception is created by the desire for material enjoyment. This is called vipada smriti, which is the opposite of real life. The living entity is eternally the servant of Krishna, but when he desires to enjoy the material world, he cannot progress in spiritual life. One can never be happy by advancing materially. This is also stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 7:5:30. Adanta gobhir visantam tamishram puna punas charvita charvananam. Through the uncontrolled senses, one may advance one's hellish condition. He may continue to chew the chewed, that is, repeatedly accept birth and death. The conditioned souls use the duration of life between birth and death only to engage in the same hackneyed activities, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. In the lower animal species, we find the same activities. Since these activities are repeated, engaging in them is like chewing that which has already been chewed. If one can give up his ambition to engage in hackneyed material life and take to Krishna consciousness instead, he will be liberated from the stringent laws of material nature. One does not need to make a separate attempt to become liberated. If one simply engages in the service of the Lord, he will be liberated automatically. As Srila Bilva Mangala Thakur therefore says, Mukti Swayam Muktuya Tanjali Sevata Shman. Liberation stands before me with folded hands, begging to serve me. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, the gopis are fallen in the great ocean of separation, and they are being devoured by the timangila fish, which represents their ambition to serve you. The gopis are to be delivered from the mouths of these timangila fish, for they are pure devotees. Since they have no material conception of life, why should they aspire for liberation? The gopis do not want that liberation desired by yogis and jnanis, for they are already liberated from the ocean of material existence. Om Gyanati Maranjasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshura Nilita Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So many nice points in this verse and purport. Tim and Gillifish, how many know what a Tim and Gillifish is? Huh? We didn't see. I don't think anybody has seen. At least not in this age, day and age. But Tim and Gillifish are said to be fish that are so big that they can eat whales for lunch. It's a very, very big fish. Huge. And they're so deep in the ocean that nobody sees them. Sometimes devotees speculate that in the Bermuda Triangle, these boats that disappear have been eaten by Tim and Gilla fish. That's a speculation. But the idea is that the fish is so big that it could conceivably swallow a whole boat. And Prabhupada gives reference that they do, in fact, eat whales. So it's a very, very big fish. So that the Tim and Gilla fish is devouring, it says, the gopis are fallen in the great ocean of separation, and they are being devoured by the Tim and Gilla fish, which represent their ambition to serve you. So this fish is very, very big, and the gopis are being delivered from the mouths of these Tim and Gilla fish. So in other words, the gopis' devotion is extremely big, bigger than the Tim and Gilla fish. So we can understand just a little tiny bit how devoted the gopis are. And the gopis are said to be the topmost devotees of Krishna. So when we hear about how devoted the gopis are, how sincere they are, how selfless they are, then we begin to get a small conception of what it is we as devotees are trying to achieve, as aspiring devotees are trying to achieve. So here's another point. The gopis are not interested in liberation because they're already liberated. They're not interested in getting free from suffering. And generally speaking, the people in this material world, they come to a point where they've had it with material life, and different types of liberation are there. One can become merged into the oneness of the Brahma Jyoti. This is one type of liberation. To become one with everything. In other words, this is what we call Mayavadi conception. So they want to enter into spiritual life, but because excuse me, because they have no real conception of service to Krishna, they want to stop all of relationships. They're not interested in relationships. Why? Because relationships are painful. In this material world, relationships are painful. Face it, you know, everything is a drag. You know, you have some relationship with someone and then, you know, they go against you, or even if they don't try to do something wrong, you have some mental concoction that this person is trying to make me suffer. Whatever it is, it's always a struggle in the material world. And now, especially in Kali Yuga, known as the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, it's even worse because at the slightest, you know, little tiny conflict, there is a big fight. We see it all the time, you know, they fight over the silliest little things. You know, oh, you took my pillow, or you took my, you know, my towel off my rack. You know, I was drying that towel there. And you know, get in a fight over a towel. I mean, like, come on, give me a break, people. But these things happen over the smallest things, you know, the tiniest little thing. And we start to fight and scream and yell. So these relationships are, you know, very, very fragile. They can break what we think is a nice relationship. Someone gets married, oh, this is such a nice person. And then we find out, oh, this person, they don't like blue tablecloths. It's like, but I love blue tablecloths. You know, let's fight over a tablecloth, you know. And so they fight. And then there's a divorce because you don't like blue tablecloths. These things are going on. Some completely stupid thing. We fight, we argue, and then we break the relationship because of some, you know, insignificant little discrepancy in our likes and dislikes. So, the Mayavadis, they don't want relationships. They've had it with relationships. No more relationships. Forget relationships. Just let me identify with my spiritual identity and merge into the oneness of Brahman and, you know, peace. Shanti, 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 shanti. No more fighting. Forget it. Okay, so they work very hard for that. If you visit some of the ashrams in India where the Mayavadis go, that they're actually very, very strict, more strict than in our movement. They work harder on their austerities than we do. Their austerities are much more rigid. There's no question of marriage or, you know, you have to be a sannyasi. You have to, it's just a lot tougher. They're more stringent in their vows and their austerities, and they just work very, very hard. I mean, obviously there's less sincere and more sincere. But if you find the very, very sincere Mayavadi followers, they're very strict. It's a fact. And Prabhupada actually said that one should offer obeisances to Mayavadi sannyasis. You should pay dandavats to them. He said, from a distance, from a distance, but, you know, offer obeisances to them because they're great yogis, no doubt, no question. Their austerity is very, very great. But what is the goal of their austerity? The goal of their austerity is to merge with God. And ultimately, this type of merging means that, you know, God is one, I am one with God, and then the conclusion is, I am God. They think that I'm one with God, I'm non-different from God, therefore I am God. So this conclusion, according to Vaishnava philosophy, is incorrect. Lord Chaitanya, he said, yes, you are one with God, but at the same time, you're different from God. So this is this very famous Achintabheda-Bheda-Tattva philosophy, which was, you know, really not existent before Lord Chaitanya came and, you know, sorted it out. So this idea that, yes, it's true, you are one with God, but at the same time, you're dual. So oneness and duality, simultaneous. So this conception was not really prevalent before Lord Chaitanya's time. But by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, we understand this Achintabheda-Bheda-Tattva philosophy. So it makes sense to us. See, we can balance the understanding that yes, the soul is spiritual, full of knowledge, full of bliss, eternal, Sat Chit Ananda. But at the same time, we are separate from Krishna, simultaneously connected with Krishna and separate. So there's different types of energy of Krishna. There's Paramatma, Jivatma, and then there's the material energy. So Paramatma Krishna, he is superior energy. The Jivatma, or the individual living entities, which are not God, they are what we call marginal energies. And then there's the material energy. So the marginal energy is called marginal because sometimes it can be spiritual and sometimes it can be influenced by the material energy. So it's just, and Prabhupada gives this example of the shore of the ocean, where sometimes it is covered by water, and when the tide goes out, then the land is exposed. So the material energy is like the water covering and sometimes uncovering. And the place which is covered and uncovered is like the Jivatman. And the part that's always uncovered, that's Paramatma or Krishna. Krishna is never covered. He can never be covered by the material energy. He's never influenced by the material energy. Never, ever, ever. So when the Mayavadis say that everything in this material world is Maya, and even when Krishna comes, that's also Maya. That's just another aspect of Maya. So this is incorrect understanding according to Vaishnava philosophy. Krishna can never be covered by the material energy. But we, as living entities, we can be covered. So our duty as human beings in this lifetime is to get free from this covering, get free from the material energy, and once again become reinstated as dasvana, dasvana, das, servant of the servant of the servant. We need to reawaken our dormant love of Krishna. That love of Krishna is there within every living entity, but somehow or another we've fallen into this material world and we've forgotten about Krishna. We've forgotten about our love for Krishna. We've forgotten how great Krishna really is. And so by chanting, hearing from these books, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, we can reawaken that love of Krishna. Because the living entity is eternally the servant of Krishna, but somehow or another we've fallen into this material world, and it's very difficult to make spiritual progress because the material world is designed to distract us. It's designed to fool us into thinking that we can enjoy here materially. But one can never be happy in this material world because it's not our natural environment. And Prabhupada gives this example of a fish out of water. We're talking about fish, so we'll use that analogy. So you take your Timangila fish and you take him out of the ocean, and you try to make him happy. You give him nice food, you give him, you know, whatever he wants, you know, drive him around. Of course, he would have to have a very big, maybe a 16-wheel combi truck, right? Not even big enough, okay. You'd have to have a very big truck to move him around, and you'd have to feed him a lot of, I don't know what he eats, whales. But even you feed him whales and drive him around on his big truck, he's not going to be satisfied because he is happy in the water. So in order for the Timangila fish to be happy, we have to put him back into the ocean. And he has to have a big ocean, right? So we're like that. We need to get back into our natural element, which is the spiritual world. Because in this material world, it's so many problems. Birth, death, old age, disease, and adiatmic, adibodhic, adidaivic, the sufferings of the living entity that are inflicted upon us by our own mind and body, sufferings that are inflicted upon us by other living entities, sufferings which are inflicted upon us by the demigods or natural disturbances, All these things, they're all happening to us, you know, every moment. If we get a little bit of happiness in this material world, it's not really happiness. It's a relief, just a relief from the pangs of material existence. A brief fraction of a moment we get some relief. But birth and death are sure to come. So these enjoyments, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, we think we're getting some pleasure from these things, but Prabhupada again uses this example of chewing the chewed. So we weren't just in India, and here we don't have so much sugar cane, but in India there's a lot of people selling sugar cane. And sometimes you see the boys, they'll be chewing, they'll just get a stick and they'll just chew on it. So they'll chew on the sugar cane and then they'll, you know, get as much out of it as they can and then they'll throw. So this is what in India they say, yeah, just use and throw. This is a common term. Of course they do it with plastic also, which is not so good. But use and throw, this is a term they use. So chew it up and then throw. But then somebody else will not have, you know, whatever it is, the 2 rupees for a stick of cane. So he'll think, oh, there's still some juice in that. So he picks it up and then he chews like this. So this is where this term, chewing the chewed, comes from. It comes from this idea of chewing on some sugar cane. So once it's been chewed, there's nothing left, you know. Maybe you're chewing the chewed of the chewed, you know. He chews it and then he throws it and then the next guy picks it up and he chews it even more. Gets maybe, you know, a drop or two out of it. And then he throws it. And then somebody is foolish enough to pick it up and chew again. But this is what we're doing. We're trying to enjoy this material world. But it's like chewing the chewed. There's nothing there. There's no taste there. And yet we're so foolish that we're picking it up and trying again. Let's try again. Let's try again. Huh? We try again to enjoy this material world. This is our foolishness. So we have to try to wake up from this delusion that there's some enjoyment here. Okay, there's maybe one drop of cane juice left in that sugar cane juice. Maybe there's one drop, but you know, we're not satisfied by that one drop. Panchatattva ki jai. We can never be satisfied by that one drop. We want an ocean of happiness, right? We want to taste that nectar for which we are always anxious. Everybody wants to be happy. Everybody wants to be satisfied. That's natural. The soul is naturally happy. But we're looking for happiness in the wrong places. This happiness of chewing the chewed is just in the mind. Or Prabhupada uses this example of the will of the wisp. Sometimes an animal will see some mirage of water in the desert. In California, we live in a desert. And sometimes when you're driving across the desert, you'll see what looks like water. You know, you look across the desert, there's no water. But when you look across the desert, it looks like there's a lake. You know, it's quite convincing. You think there's a lake. And you're driving and driving and driving. You get to the place where you think there's a lake. And then, of course, there's no lake. It's just more and more desert. So this illusion of happiness is like that. It's a mirage. It doesn't exist, but we're thinking, oh yeah, if we just keep going. Prabhupada uses another funnier example. He says it's like the washerman who hangs a carrot in front of the donkey. He'll have a stick. He'll be on, you know, load up the donkey with so much clothing. He takes a washing down to the river and back. So he'll load up his donkey with a ton of stuff, you know. In India, again, sometimes you see these trucks, and the truck is this big, right? And then on top of the truck is like this, you know, gigantic pile of, I don't know what is it, it's straw or hay or whatever it is. But, you know, the truck is like buried in this gigantic, huge package, you know. And you're just wondering, how is it possible they could stack? I mean, they would never let you do this in America or here. But in India, all kinds of things like this are going on. But you can just imagine how much stuff, how much laundry these guys used to pack on top of a donkey. You know, just load him up to the max, you know, and there's this poor donkey. So how to get the donkey to move? You know, once you got him, he's got him loaded up. So you get a carrot on a string and you hang it and you're walking along, right? And then you hang this carrot and the donkey is going, oh yeah, carrot. So he's walking and then, of course, the carrot is always 1 foot away. So in this way, he gets the donkey to carry this huge, huge load. Well, you know, okay, maybe he gets finally to the end, then he gives him the carrot once he's carried it for, you know, 5 kilometers or whatever it is. So, you know, we're like that. We're seeing this mirage in the distance, which doesn't exist. Or we're seeing this carrot in front of our nose, and we're, we get up in the morning, we go to work, we work all day long, right? Struggle with the hard struggle of material existence. Because we're thinking, oh yeah, if I keep doing this, I'm going to get that carrot. I'm going to get a carrot. So when, you know, donkey's looking for a carrot, we're looking for, you know, some money so we can buy some stuff, more stuff. You know, how do you say stuff? More useless stuff. You know, all these things that we're hankering for, they're all just temporary things that will eventually be completely useless, isn't it? Now the latest thing, of course, is these cell phones and computers. But it's such a huge illusion, isn't it? You work hard. You think, yeah, I just need the latest iPhone, right? And then, you know, you struggle very, very hard. And then you go out and you finally, you know, get the money to buy this thing. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, you know, I got my iPhone 6. And then iPhone 7 comes out, you know. So now your iPhone 6 is like, yeah, you got iPhone 6. Ah, useless. But isn't it? I mean, we're all in the same boat, you know. Computers, iPhones, cars, all these things. They're just useless stuff. I mean, I remember, you know, we had this one computer, the eMac or something like that. You know, I remember I had one because I used it for my music, right? And this is like, you know, $2,000, right? $2,000. And now, you know, yet that same thing is like, you know, people don't even want to look at it. Isn't it? You use them for a doorstop or a paperweight or, you know, just completely useless. So this technology, these gizmos, this stuff, it's never, never going to make us happy. On the contrary, we just become frustrated, struggling with these so-called material advancements. So chewing the chewed, we're just struggling with this stuff, chewing this stuff up, looking for some happiness, looking for some satisfaction. But it's not there. We're looking in the wrong place. So what do we, you know, this is the nice thing about Krishna consciousness, is that we have a positive, you know, okay, so many people have written songs, and, you know, Bob Dylan was very good at writing songs about the futility of material existence. So that's one side, but, you know, the nice thing is that Lord Chaitanya has come with a positive solution, a positive program, you know, a practical means by which to get free from this delusion of thinking that we can enjoy in this material world. He's given us the holy name. He's given us prasadam. He's given us all these books. All these things are there to help us understand our true identity as spirit souls and servants of Krishna. So once we get a glimpse of this, once we get a little taste of this process, this philosophy, this nectar, then it's our duty to try to help others to also understand. Because the devotees are not satisfied just enjoying with Krishna. Just like the gopis said, always such a wonderful example. They are always interested in bringing the other gopis to serve Krishna. They're not happy to serve Krishna. They want to bring the other gopis. All the gopis are always trying to bring the other gopis to serve Krishna. That's their mood, is to always engage others in the service of Krishna. So we also have to follow in that mood. This is also Srila Prabhupada's mood to there's Bhajanandi and Gostanandi, right? So Bhajanandi is the person who wants to just shut out the world, pretend that I'm safe. So he goes into a cave or some secluded forest or someplace and simply always chanting, you know, trying to meditate on Krishna through his holy name or through the meditate on the Paramatma like this. And this is very exalted, trying to reconnect with Krishna. But then there's the other devotees who are more interested in trying to serve Krishna through preaching. So that's what our ISKCON movement is about, is trying to help other people to not just keep it for ourselves, but to spread this movement, the Sankirtan movement. And here again in the purport, it said that Mukti Swayam Mukti Kutanjajali Sevanpal. Liberation stands before me with folded hands begging to serve me. So one who has engaged in the service of the Lord, he'll get all the benefits of all the other types of yoga. We shouldn't think that, oh, we're going to miss something if we surrender to Krishna and we try to serve Krishna through preaching. These other yogis and gyanis, they're going to get this, they're going to get that. What about me? You don't have to worry about that. All these things are automatically attained by the bhakta who is trying to serve Krishna through this preaching movement. Like there's different types of yogic cities. Cities means perfection, right? To become smaller than the smallest, become greater than the greatest. And sometimes these yogis, you can sit in one place and then you can reach someplace else and grab something and bring it back, even though it's on the other, you know, in another room or different place altogether. You have this city where you can, sometimes you see these yogis, they can do this. They'll reach out and they'll bring back something and they have this city. They can do it. So, these things, all these type of cities, perfections, they come automatically to the bhakta. But quite frankly, the bhakta is not so interested in that. He doesn't care. It doesn't really amount to a hill of beans, as we say. A hill of beans, right? So what? You got some beans. So yeah, I can grab some ashes. So what? You know, okay, I can grab a rock. Or, you know, whatever it is. You know, big deal. What's the use of a rock? Hmm? Even a touchstone, right? Who was it that had the touchstone and he tossed it and it was just in the... Rupa Goswami? One of the Goswamis. They had this touchstone. A touchstone is very valuable. You touch it to some metal and the metal turns to gold. So how many people wouldn't like to have that, right? I'm thinking, yeah, that sounds good. I'll take one of those. You just touch it. Because, you know, we're always looking around. Yeah, I need this. I need that. I need this for Krishna. I need that for Krishna. Or, you know, of course, if you really have a pure desire, that's one thing. But most of us, you know, we have what we call mixed devotional service. We want to serve Krishna, but yeah, Krishna, I still want a little bit on the side. You know, what's my fringe benefit? What's the perk? What can I get out of this deal? Right? So, I mean, face it, you know, we're not pure devotees. We're, at least, I don't know. I know I'm not a pure devotee. I still have material desires. But for the really advanced devotees, they have this, you know, touchstone. Make anything into gold. He just tossed it. Where's that touchstone? Oh, that? Oh, yeah, it's over there in the garbage heap someplace. You know, I don't know, wherever. You can find it. It's over there. I don't care. I'm just happy meditating on Krishna and serving Krishna. So for the bhakta, the pure bhakta, all these material things are not really interesting. There was that one pastime where the gopis are looking for Krishna. And then Krishna, he wanted to play some joke. So he transferred himself into Narayan, right? Four-armed form, Narayan. So everybody knows Narayan can grant you liberation. You know, you just say some prayers to Narayan. So the gopis are looking for Krishna. Krishna transfers himself into Narayan, or Vishnu form. And the gopis see him, and they say, oh, you know, they offer some respects, but they're not really interested in thinking, oh, well, there's Vishnu, he can grant me liberation right now, right here. No, they're interested, oh, Haribo, have you seen Krishna? they're just mad after Krishna. They're interested in serving Krishna and loving Krishna. Everything else is not interesting. They're not interested. So yeah, that's the nature of the spiritual world. All the inhabitants of the spiritual world, they just love Krishna. Here's Mother Yashoda. Mother Yashoda is interested in serving Krishna. She doesn't even realize that Krishna is God. This is something, you know, where did this conception come from? We never had this conception growing up in the Christian tradition that God can become, you know, your son. Usually it's always God as the father, right? But to have the God as the son, where you're actually a parent to Krishna, to God. But Krishna enjoys this relationship. So there's different types of relationships that devotees can have with Krishna. And any of them are fantastic. So Mother Yashoda has this position where she acts as the mother of God. And sometimes she even has to chastise him. She's chasing him with a stick. Of course, nobody can chastise Krishna. But Krishna actually enjoys it, you know, when his devotee wants to take care of him, wants to, you know, is concerned about his welfare. He enjoys this. So these different relationships are there with the bhaktas. And the bhaktas don't need to aspire for any type of liberation or merging or what to speak of void, voidism. The voidism is like the Buddhist philosophy where they've just so fed up with material energy that they just want to become nothing, right? So this is another type of philosophy that people are aspiring for. The Mayavadis want to become one with everything or become God. The voidists want to become nothing. They just want to finish everything. I don't want nothing. Just make me nothing. But the devotees aren't interested in these things. The devotees certainly aren't interested in material things. They're interested in this loving relationship with Krishna. So, again, the relationships in the material world, they're full of problems. So we tend to think that relationships are not good. But that loving relationship with Krishna is good, because Krishna is never going to let you down. Krishna is always interested in your welfare. Krishna is always interested in making you happy. So this type of relationship is very, very desirable. And when we serve Krishna, then we get a taste for that. And we understand that, as Prabhupada once said, there really is a Krishna. He slammed his hand. We just have to wake up. And how do we do that in this day of Kali Yuga? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this is the prescribed yajna or sacrifice in this age, is to just chant Hare Krishna, associate with the devotees, read Prabhupada's books, do service for Krishna, try to engage other people in the service of Krishna, and in this way we'll become happy and we'll also make those around us happy. And yeah, that's what we all want, right? To be happy. So let's try with full enthusiasm to spread this Krishna consciousness music. Freudian slip. Mission left and right. And be successful. Utilize this human life. Okay. Thank you very, very much. Hare Krishna. If there's any questions, comments. Hare Krishna. Yes, bro.
I have a question related to this glitter fish or glitter fish. I saw there is also Matsya, incarnation of Lord, but Matsya was bigger than
a Tim and Gila fish. Yeah, that's a good point.
Was, huh?
Yeah, sure. Must have been, right? I mean, I don't know. But.
Because probably the ocean was much bigger than
yeah,
the ocean.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, he was definitely bigger, much, yeah.
She saw him, yeah. Well, I think that's a pretty safe guess. I've never read any, but we read how big was Matsya. Even the ocean was too small.
Yeah.
The pot was too small. This was too small. Even the ocean was too small. So yeah. Tim and Gila fish. Everything's right. How do you say? Comparative, but that's not the word I'm looking for. Relative. Everything is relative. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.